No playing.
Hello everyone and welcome to D20 Dudes, a tabletop role-playing podcast where the die decides our topic. I am Dylan.
And I'm Doug.
And to head up this episode, just straight out the gate, oops. I just forgot to make one last week, and that's why there wasn't one. It's the whole reason.
It's fine.
But this week, we're going to talk about a system called Vason. If you don't know that word, and you probably don't, it's kind of like an old Scandinavian word for cryptid. It just kind of generally refers to any kind of monster or spookum that could cause trouble or shenanigans out in the world. And they made a tabletop role-playing game about hunting those down and dealing with them.
Cool.
It is meant to be a horror game. My group never lets it be a horror game.
I mean, slapstick is the best stick, so I'm not really sure what the problem is.
That is true. It is a very big stick with which to slap. So the game, at its base, very simple, very quick. You can make characters in like 30 seconds, and you just go. And the idea is, you guys are known as Thursday's Children, which is in reference to some old Scandinavian rhyme wherein Thursday's children are children born of calamity or misfortune, and as a result, they are able to see the Vason. They can see the monsters, because ordinarily they cannot be seen unless they wish deliberately to be seen, which is why a lot of people who can see them are considered insane and or stupid. Because you can see them, it is now your responsibility to deal with them. Because it is now your responsibility to deal with them, you move to the city of magical Stockholm in magical Sweden, and you make a little magical castle, and you travel all over magical Scandinavia and gather information on potential Vason, figure out what their weaknesses are, and either drive them off, help them achieve their goal if they're doing something benevolent, or possibly try to kill them.
Okay, so when we talk about weaknesses, how many of them are weak to shotgun bullets?
Almost none.
That's unfortunate.
They cannot be harmed by traditional means because they are magical creatures who don't give a damn about your fancy tubes that throw rocks real fast.
What if we use a non-traditional gun?
What do you mean, like a gun that shoots cats?
Like a potato launcher.
The potato will probably do more damage than the potato gun. And well, I mean, you probably do that same amount of damage just by throwing the potato, because it'll just be a Vason that can't touch potatoes or something like that.
Okay. I was going to say, of course the potato would do more damage. I'm not shooting the gun with the gun.
That would be impressive if you were. You just hold the potato as like a weight to let the gun launch off. So the game is a D6 base. It's got kind of those same vibes as like Tenra or Blades in the Dark. It's you have an attribute and then skills that are governed by those attributes. The way you make a check is you will combine the total of the attribute and the skill. That is your pool of D6s. You roll those D6s. Any result of a 6 counts as one success. Most things only need one success to work. It's like if you're looking for clues, as long as you get one success, you did it. If you're trying to convince somebody to join your cause, as long as you get one success, you did it. And it's because there's not a range of successes, it's just 6. A 5 don't count, a 4 don't count, just 6.
So there's a 1 in 6 chance of doing whatever you want.
Depending on how many dice you can roll. Like, I think we played one game of this, or like not one game, but I guess one small adventure of this. in my Sunday group, it wasn't exactly their jam, mostly because they don't know what the hell was going on. But I think we had a person who was rolling like 10 D6s on every check they were doing because it was like the only thing they were good at. So they were always rolling that one thing. And I think they succeeded at it once.
Oh boy.
Over the course of like 8 hours and two games. It was a little hilarious. So it can be a little bit rougher in terms of like you really got to get those sixes for the successes, but it also really wants you to play the failures as a way to progress the story. So like, it's meant to be a horror game. So bad things are supposed to happen, and that's how things proceed.
That's right. Magic Hillbilly Bigfoot is supposed to win.
Yeah. Yeah, he is, actually. Because most of the time, Magic Hillbilly Bigfoot isn't that bad of a guy. Some of them are assholes. Like, there's a whole compendium of Vaisen in the back of the book that you are meant to deal with. A thing I really like about them, and what makes the game pretty interesting, in my opinion, is that most of these Vaisen don't have a set list of specific abilities that they have. It's like, this Vaisen has access to enchantment magic, which means anything, and I mean anything, that has to do with like manipulating the thoughts or feelings of people around them, or like tricking their senses or something like that, they can all just do it because it's a magic that they have. So you walk into a village and everyone's walking around like a zombie, it could be any number of Vaisen because so many of them have access to enchantment magic. And it's not like they're using a specific spell or they have a specific kind of special ability that they use to make these things happen. It's just, as long as it has enchantment magic, there's this whole massive suite of things it can do. And it's not limited in scope. So like werewolves can do that shit.
Huh. So Slenderman could do that shit.
Yeah, well, Slenderman definitely could. That would be such an interesting game to play, to have them go up against Slenderman, because there's just no concrete canon on Slendy. And that's actually kind of like the idea, is like, even when it gives you like the weaknesses and the ways you beat a werewolf and blah, 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 there are even other kind of example missions it gives, and it's like, well, this is a completely different way in this particular instance where you would either defeat or save the thing or whatever. It's just meant to be like, you got to figure out what is going to work in this exact situation. Because even amongst the scholars of the Vaisen, there's no concrete set one way that any of these creatures will work. And the reason for that is, and it's a thing that's like, it's kind of meant to be a secret, but like, of course, oh my goodness, I just yoked one of my lockpicks so far. It's kind of meant to be a secret, but of course, anyone who reads the rule book is going to know this, is that the Vaisen exist because we think they do.
Yeah.
It's like some 40K shit. So like, because we believe in the Vaisen, they are real. And these are the kinds of powers we have because everyone thinks they have those powers. And thus, if there's like a bit of regional folklore where like a certain tale got told about a particular kind of Vaisen, that will apply to Vaisen in that particular region, because that is the common consensus, the common belief of the way that that Vaisen works. And it will work there, but it probably won't work anywhere else because they don't have that particular singular belief there.
So they're all just tuples, oh my god.
Tulpa,
thank you.
Tulpa, sort of. And you got like the kind of like the standard ones. You got werewolves, you got vampires in there.
Santa Claus.
He's not a Vaisen. He's a god. Only gods can travel the whole earth at night in a single 24-hour span. Tell me I'm wrong, Doug. I'm not.
I mean, if that's what you believe the Vaisen can do.
So yeah, there's a long list. And there's some weird ones. Like, I really like Norse mythology, so I know like a few of these things just kind of offhand. But then there's like some stuff like the Neck, The Neck is like, is a singular Vaisin. There is not a species of Vaisin called the Necks. There is a singular the Neck. And he's kind of a pain in the ass to deal with. And there's trolls, and trolls are just kind of, it's like a catch-all term for a very broad spectrum of Vaisin that are all kind of reclusive, magical, child kidnapping Vaisin that can do all kinds of stuff, just kind of given of what people think they do in the region. And the whole game centers on your characters figuring out this information and then doing something to help, and a lot of the time failing.
So does that mean, like, if you live, what are you called again?
We're called Thursday's Children.
But don't you have, like, a more interesting name after you join Fantasy Stockholm?
No.
No?
No.
You don't have a profession title or anything?
Nope.
All right, cool. So, generic hunter. If you're a veteran, does that mean you just ran faster than your friends in most cases?
Quite probably, actually. So there's some interesting bits about character creation, and I'm going to grab my book here and bring these up, because I actually really like what this means for the role-playing perspective. By the way, this book is just so good. It's just so very...
booky?
It's very satisfying to hold. It's got like a canvas cover, and all the pages are like really thick, sturdy paper. It's so good. All right, let's see. What page is this going to be? 17. Your player character. So, you pick an archetype, which is kind of like your class. It's like, you know, the things that you would be good at. So, there's things like you can be an old soldier. You can be a doctor, an academic, an occultist, like a game hunter, priest, an officer of the law, a private detective, somebody's servant, could be a writer or a vagabond. And these are all kind of like, they're not meant to say like, these are the things you can do and these are things you can't. It's just like, these are the things that you excel at. Because even if you don't have any ranks in a skill, you have some amount of ranks in that attribute. You have to. So even if you don't have a skill trained, you can still roll your attribute dice and have a chance of succeeding. The next thing you pick is your age group, and this is another cool thing where it kind of, there's a risk-reward thing between having different ages. So there's three ages. You can be a young character, you can be a middle-aged character, or you can be an old character. And what this does is it changes the distribution of attribute points and skill points you have. So a young character gets 15 attribute points and 10 skill points because they are young, they are spry, their bodies are working real good, but they don't know a whole lot yet. A middle-aged character gets 14 attribute points, but they get 12 skill points. They're a little bit on the decline, but they're smarter than the young folks. And old characters get 13 attribute points, but 14 skill points. So while you can have a broader range of generalist skills of things you can do by being a young character, by being an old character, you can be very, very specialized and very good at what you do, because you notice that's not a linear, like, track over. Like, for every one attribute point you lose to your age, you get two skill points.
Yeah.
So being an older character could just be very good and very skilled at certain things, and just because they're not as sprightly as they used to be doesn't mean they're not going to be effective. You'll then choose your character's motivation. And this is like, there's not like a game set of motivations or things that affect like your stats or anything. It's like literally, what is your motivation for this character? Why are you going out and hunting the Vaisin? Why do you specifically think this character would go and hunt the Vaisin? So it could be that you encountered one in the past and it scared you shitless and you want to prove that you're bigger and stronger and can beat them for your own catharsis. Or it could just be that because you have this ability, you Spider-Man it. With great power comes great responsibility. I got to do this.
For my character, he'd be an older man. He's probably about to die, and it's just like a bucket list kind of thing. Like going,
I want to fight a werewolf before I go. Sounds fun. I want to fist fight a werewolf.
Yeah, I'll either win or die, like I was going to anyway. So it all works out.
Now, as I mentioned before, it's kind of like calamity or like a misfortune that causes you to get your ability to see the face in, what, your sight. And the next part of your character creation is picking your trauma, which is the thing that caused you to get the sight. So it could be that like you were bitten by a Selkie when you were younger, or it could be that a werewolf abducted you and left you in the woods. Something like that. You get to pick what that event was.
You saw an imp use a chamber pot.
What?
You saw an imp use a chamber pot.
But how would you see the imp?
That would be the trauma. It wanted you to see it.
It wanted you to see his impish pee-pee.
Well, I was thinking okay. Number two, but yeah.
<He's> pooping. You'd still see his little pee-pee. The next one is your dark secret. Every character has a dark secret that is like a problem that they are ashamed of, or like some great thing that they want to keep hidden. It can be linked to your trauma or your motivation or something like that. But you have a dark secret that it is absolutely pivotal that you don't let the other players find out.
I definitely don't wear a toupee.
It's incredibly funny in that these couple sessions of Faison we played for like a test in our Sunday game, we were going to have Rob join us, but he had to dip out. Rob was playing an academic, and Richard, I believe, was... Were you part of these games, Doug? I feel like you were.
Nah.
What was it? We had somebody else who was not part of our usual group.
That one guy.
It's probably that one guy. Anyway, I believe it was Richard was playing an officer. And Richard's dark secret is that he didn't actually care about the mission against the Vason. It was literally like he actually managed to convince his higher ups that he had the site. And his higher ups then said, okay, you're going to go join this other group of people who have the site, and you're going to make sure that they're not going to weaponize the Vason. And Rob's character was an academic, and his dark secret was he's going to figure out how to weaponize the Vason.
Amazing.
It was so funny.
Oh, boy.
After that, you'll choose your attributes, you'll choose your skills, you get talents. Your archetype offers you 3 starting talents to choose from, and as you play and gain experience points, you can get more talents, and you can choose freely among them, including talents from other archetypes. So you're not limited to just what you have. You then get to pick relationships. You have a relationship with each of the other player characters in some way. So you will then describe what your relationship to these other people is. It could be that you're acquaintances and you're meeting for the first time here. It could be that the officer and the academic are actually brothers. But you get to pick what the relationship between these characters is and how that's going to affect the roleplay going forward.
And I can't wait to play this and just make a homeless guy they all know.
He just goes around town and is a problem.
Yeah.
That's why everyone else is. What's his homeless man's trauma that allowed him to see the sight?
Oh, we've already been over that. He saw an imp poop once when he was a kid.
He saw an imp pooping once when he was a kid.
Yeah, see, the secret secret is they poop gems into chamber pots.
Wow. He sees like an old aristocratic lady with a nice gem-studded bracelet walking down the street, and he's like, no! The poop!
The truth can't be escaped. Nothing is real. Except alcohol.
After that, you get to choose resources. You have a resources value. Your resources value is determined by your archetype, the base value of it. And normally you will start out with the lower value of the archetype. However, you can spend skill points to raise your resources value up to the maximum for your archetype. Now, certain archetypes have limits. So like an officer, somebody who's kind of like up in the upper crust of the military, they could live a pretty modest but decent life. You could find like an academic who is like borderline starving. You could have an aristocrat who has like, even at the lowest level of things, has plenty of resources. But your resources are, since there isn't currency in this game, it kind of determines what you have access to and what you can get. And it goes from a resources value of 1, being destitute and you're having to completely rely on others for survival, to 8, meaning you are just filthy rich and have all of the money in magical Sweden. And you can just kind of get rooms at a mansion or a castle whenever you want to because you're just so dang rich.
It reminds me of the wealth system from D20 Modern, where you have that same sort of numerical value, but you roll with it. You roll a die and then you add the number.
Yeah, so and you can actually do resources rolls to do requisitions. So if somebody in town has a gun, you can roll resources and be like, I got a good result on this. And it means that I either have enough money on me or can quickly get enough money to convince this person to give me their gun or something like that. And then I think you can actually just spend the resources value.
Hold on. Did you just say I can roll a resource value not to purchase a gun, but to steal it from another person?
No, you don't steal it.
It kind of sounds like a theft roll.
So if you roll, say you've got a 4 in resources and you're trying to convince somebody to give you their gun, you roll 4d6s, and if you manage to get a success, it's like, all right, cool, I don't have a whole lot of money on me, but I've got $20 now, I got another $20 at home. If I give you that, will you give me the gun? And of course, this is magical Sweden in the 1800s. $40 is probably worth a gun, who knows? And if you succeed, they give you the gun and you give them $40 at some point.
Are you sure this is Sweden and not Texas?
Yeah, it's magical Sweden. Although I would love to do this game in an American cryptid thing. I would love to just play a game of this and have it just be all you guys trying to go hunt down the Jersey Devil.
Oh, yeah. let's do it.
Another thing you get is mementos. This is kind of like the trinkets from D&D, where you roll a die and you get an item just off of this list, and maybe it's useful, maybe it's not. It's really just kind of there to serve as a roleplay launch point. You got some pretty normal stuff, like you roll an 11, you get a dried red rose. You roll a 66, you get a manuscript that's been passed down in your family. You roll a 24, you get a monkey skull.
Not a paw. Interesting.
You roll 42, you get the plans for a family tomb. Not yours, just a.
the plans, like the blueprints or the deed to
it? Yeah, the plans.
Weird.
Roll 36, you have a tame pigeon.
Oh, hell yeah, familiars. I know what drunk Bob needs, a pigeon.
Roll a 61, and you've got some sleeping pills, baby.
The one weakness of all Vason.
It's date rape. That's horrible.
Are you fucking... Oh my gosh, what's the name of the... what's the one anime about the two angels?
I don't know.
Oh, god damn it. Hold on. You know what? Maybe you can think of the name.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hold on. You'll know what it is. I just can't for the life of me think of what it's actually called right now. And no one gives the proper fucking credits.
Penny and Stocking?
Thank you. God damn. I mean, excuse me.
Why is there a Phoenix Wright monkey?
That's in the show. Have you not seen the show?
No.
Well, anyway, it's about two angels who are very horny.
That tracks.
Oh, man, I'm glad we got, what was that, a solid minute of silence? I'm glad we got there.
So there's a...
We should probably make up for it by, cutting that out and just replacing some other noise. We'll workshop it at the end.
We'll just put an episode of Pain and Stalking. So another cool thing about the system is you don't take wounds in the same traditional sense. You get conditions. So you have 3 physical conditions: exhausted, battered, and wounded. You have 3 mental conditions: angry, frightened, and hopeless. And these affect your die rolls. So if you have a condition, one of your, say you have a physical condition, you get a minus one modifier to any tests that use a physical skill. If you have a mental condition, you get a minus one modifier to any tests. If you have two, you have a minus two. If you have three, you have minus three. If you get three conditions, either physical or mental, you become broken. Being physically broken means you've been like shot in the gut and left for dead. They've literally just kicked the shit out of you and you're just laying there groaning in pain. Being mentally broken could be actual insanity. Like you're just gibbering to yourself and unable to bring yourself together. And each time this happens, it's like you're just incapable of interacting with the world in a normal way. If you have to make a skill check, which of course, like most of the time, you're not going to be made to make skill checks if you're not being present in whatever's going on, because it's like you've gotten the shit kicked out of you or whatever. But if you have to make a skill test because you're part of it, you will automatically fail. You cannot pass a skill test whenever you're broken. And you will sustain a critical wound, which at that point you will roll on a table, which will then mean you get a defect or an insight. And these are really cool. I'm going to look these up real quick. They are in chapter 5. So I'm going to get my happy ass to chapter 5 because I would like to talk about the defects and the insights.
The insight sounds interesting. Like in your moment of insanity, you realize something about the vase.
It can be exactly that. Chapter 5.
That's when I realized they do hate potatoes.
If only I had eaten those mashed potatoes today. So there are tables for physical and mental critical injuries. There are chronic injuries and non-chronic injuries, and then like fatal injuries and non-fatal injuries. So whenever you take a critical injury, you will roll 2d6s, and depending on what happens, you will gain either a defect or an insight. So let's say a troll just swung a cauldron at your head and kicked the shit right out of you, Doug. Your homeless man has been accosted by a troll with a cauldron. You know what, for poopsies, do you have any D6s on hand?
I don't.
All right, cool.
I rolled a 4.
Well, you need two of them.
I rolled an 8. There you go.
A 48? Okay. You can't roll an 8 on a D6.
I said so. An 8 total, Dylan. 2 4s. Come on.
2 4. All right. Well, a 44 is a bleeding wound. It is a fatal injury. You have 1d6 days to get this treated. If you don't, in that time, you die. And you also gain the defect of gangrene.
Is that like legit what it is, a 44?
Yes.
How is it every time we do this that I roll always makes sense with the narrative? He hit in the head, fatal wound, gangrene. Well,
if it was a 45, it would have crushed your genitals.
See, that's less believable because he hit me in the head. The 44 is on that's point.
Also a fatal wound, by the way. You get your dick punched in, you're going to die.
Yeah.
So those ones have defects. They do have time limits on them for the fatal injuries, which means if you do not get them treated by a professional, like by an actual doctor within the time limit, you just die. Your character dies then, because this is a terrible wound that can, in fact, kill you.
While we're on the subject of terrible wounds and fighting werewolves for fun, is there a background that is just called like bomb technician?
No. Why?
No reason. Definitely not thinking about kamikaze myself.
So the defects and insights you get from these can be permanent, or they could be they just affect you for the rest of the particular mission you're on, depending on the severity of them. Like, for instance, if my eye gets punctured and I lose an eye, probably not gonna be growing that back before the next adventure.
Unless to
probably gonna stick around.
What if your dark secret is that you're a vase?
Then you cannot eyes? Be harmed by physical means anyways.
That's the whole point. That's your perceived weakness. You can grow eyes, but bullets hurt you.
All I have one weakness. It's bullets. But on top of this, you can also get insights. So the insights are only if you roll a 6 on the first die. But if you roll an insight while you have these life-threatening illnesses or like dangers or whatever, it also gives you a bonus. So let's say you rolled a 64. That is torn body. It means something came up to you and just ripped you to shit. And somebody has to treat you and make sure that you don't die within 1d6 minutes. If you are not treated within 1d6 minutes, you straight up die. But if you survive that, you gain the champion insight. And your close combat skill is increased by 3 for the remainder of the mission.
Just the mission, huh?
Yep. Insights are never permanent.
Hmm.
There are also mental injuries that do much the same thing. For instance, you roll a 23, you have whitened hair. And you age visibly because you're so spooked. You roll a 65, you can be invaded by other people's emotions. But you have the insight of absolute empathy and your observation skill increases by 4.
Oh boy. That sounds troubling.
So defects can be permanent and stuff, but here's the thing. It's not like, oh man, I've got all these defects, this character is unusable now. A defect can only affect you once per mission. So it could be we're chasing down this pixie. We suspect this pixie of poisoning this child. We've spotted it. We're going to chase it. And you start running, and you're going to catch this thing. But, oh no, you have a back injury. Agility minus 1. Your back injury flares up. You're in pain now. You can't run as fast. But they can't pull that on you every single roll. Right. They can't completely cripple your ability to play the game with that defect. It can also affect you in many ways. It can be, you know, you have increased difficulty on a skill check. It could be a social stigma. Somebody sees that you're a hunchback and says, ugh, you're gross, disgusting, get away from me, you homeless man who's been clobbered over the head with a cauldron. It could be, there's one called My Own Worst Enemy, where something you would ordinarily be able to do, just like you can just do that thing, will now require a skill test because the injury is affecting you in such a way that you're not guaranteed to succeed at it anymore. Or it could be that you just lose control and the GM literally dictates your actions for one scene.
I like the, go ahead.
In terms of insights, you get a very similar thing where it could be like an adds a bonus to a skill test. You could have a prophetic vision or an intuitive understanding of a problem. You can give another human the sight for the duration of a scene. Or you can use your insight to control what an NPC is thinking or doing, so you get to control another NPC for a scene or two. Like, kind of on the opposite end of things if you get an insight instead of a defect.
I like the idea of failing upward. You mentioned the one about empathy and how you can be invaded, but you gain a bonus because you can read them better.
Yeah.
Slight departure. In D&D, have you ever been affected by fear, like the spell?
No, actually.
Okay, well, I have, and my favorite thing to do is to use it to my advantage. Because it says you have to do everything in your power to get away from the source of your fear. So one of my things to do is to teleport to like a nearby church and go screaming about the demon and tell them where it's at. I've done that before. Not only will they sometimes heal you, depending on how well you act that out of the fear, but then you can just bring in reinforcements. It's real fun.
It's creativity at its finest.
And yeah.
That'll be about all our time for this week, unfortunately. I could talk about this system all day because it is very cool, and like we could go into like details on the Vaisen and stuff, and that could be further episodes down the line, talking about specific Vaisen and things like that. But Doug, do you have any final thoughts or questions?
No, I just went blank. Perfect.
Cool.
Yeah, I know, right? All right,
well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Socials, got Facebook. What?
Do the socials, but like, don't end the recording afterwards.
Okay. Socials, we got a facebook.com/d20dudes. There's still a Twitter for the time being. Might be changing. Seeing some bad things going down on Twitter, but twitter.com/d20dudes if you would like to find us there. And there is a Discord server down in the description if you'd like to join us, hang out with us on the Discord. And then we will roll that magical d20 and see what next week's topic will be. 16. Ooh, the scum and villainy system. This one is, it's similar to Band of Blades in that it is based on the Forge in the Dark system, but this one is about being space pirates.
Cool.
So we'll catch you next week for that one, guys. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Real quick, though, you know how we were silent for like that solid minute or so?
Yeah.
Let's make a noise that you can loop and just put in there. Follow my lead. Now you go. Perfect. I'm sure they'll love that instead of the silence.